I hope that our previous segment helped to illustrate a lot of these terms and phrases that we're having to deal with under the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, Title I. One of the issues in the Stevenson versus Pfizer case was whether having a driver to drive the sales representative around was a reasonable accommodation. And, okay, so that's a defined term. 42 U.S.C. Section 2111 sub 9 defines reasonable accommodation, not necessarily a definition, but what it includes. And two subparts here, A, making existing facilities used by employees readily accessible to and usable by individuals with disabilities. So what we're talking about there would be obviously ramps over steps. And then B, job restructuring, part-time or modified work schedules, reassignment to a vacant position, acquisition or modification of equipment or devices, appropriate adjustment or modifications of examinations, training materials or policies, provision of qualified readers or interpreters, and other similar accommodations for individuals with disabilities. And obviously in that statutory language, there's nothing in there about a driver, but within the umbrella of sub B, where it talks about provision of qualified readers or interpreters and other similar accommodations for individuals with disabilities, that's where a driver would come in that case. Here are some cases that deal with reasonable accommodation. And one case is EEOC versus EasyFlow USA. And this was in the Western District of Pennsylvania, the federal court. And the EEOC took the position that 6 weeks of unpaid medical leave for even a probationary employee may constitute a reasonable accommodation. In other words, giving the individual some time off, unpaid time off. That theory had some legs under it, and that case ended up with a settlement. So one reasonable accommodation could be just some time off without pay so that a person can recover from a disabling condition. But that is a gray area. Another case is Wilson versus Dollar General Corporation. That's a Fourth Circuit case from 2013. And Fourth Circuit ventured into that gray area and held that a 2-day leave extension under the ADA was justified because the employee was not justified because the employee failed to show the employer at the time of the request that it would have likely produced a successful accommodation. What the court is saying there is that the time off needs to have promise of getting the person back to the point where they can perform the essential functions of the job. And if you just ask for the time off to see if the time off will have remedial effect, that may not be a reasonable accommodation. How about telework, remote working? We've just come through a pandemic. We're recording in September of 2021 after many, many months of challenging work situations and a lot of telework. Is telework a reasonable accommodation? Well, there was a pre-pandemic case from the Sixth Circuit, another federal district or federal appeals court, and this is EEOC versus Ford Motor Company, 782 F3rd 753, Sixth Circuit, 2015. And Now, in that case, a decision by a U.S. district judge had been overturned, and the U.S. district judge had granted summary judgment for Ford, holding that attendance at the job site was an essential function of the employee's job. And the employee's absences due to, and in that case, the employee's disability was an irritable bowel syndrome. The district judge thought that that made her unqualified for the job under the ADA, and held that her request to telework was not a reasonable accommodation. Now, the Sixth Circuit reversed, stating that the law must respond to the advance of technology in the employment context and recognize that the workplace is anywhere that an employee can perform her job duties. Physical presence as an essential function is a highly fact-specific question that a jury should decide. So the Sixth Circuit reversed the trial court's summary judgment and held that it was a jury issue whether the telework was a reasonable accommodation in that case. Well, as the man on late night TV sometimes says, wait, there's more. That decision was reversed by the Sixth Circuit en banc. In other words, when these cases go up to the a court of appeals, there's usually a three-judge panel that decides it. And if the disappointed party thinks that the three-judge panel made a mistake, they can ask for a hearing en banc where all of the judges from that district come together and make a decision. And the en banc panel, which is all of the judges of the Sixth Circuit, reversed the decision of the three-judge panel and held that that telework was not a reasonable accommodation in that particular case. That working remotely for up to 4 days a week was unreasonable for the plaintiff's position in that case. So, there again, it's a pre-pandemic case, and, you know, the proof could be said to be in the pudding. There's been a lot of telework and remote work going on, but I would say still a gray area, still up in the air. And the teaching, the learning to be taken from that case is employers can have positions that require the employee to be in the office to perform the essential functions of the job, but the employer should evaluate all of the underlying circumstances of a request to remote work. And where the employer has clear policies and accurate job descriptions that are consistently enforced and applied, as did Ford in this case, courts are going to be more likely to give greater deference to the employer's assessment of the job's essential functions, i.e., having to work in the workplace. And in this particular case, Ford had met with the individual employee several times and identified alternative accommodations and attempted to engage in additional discussion, which is an interactive process, and we're going to come back to that phrase also. And the employee had not cooperated, according to the Sixth Circuit, anyway. So still a gray area. You would think that as the pandemic facts come out, that we will we'll see some more cases on that point, but it's not a slam dunk that telework is going to be a reasonable accommodation. How about reassignment to a vacant position? Suppose I can't do one job, there's a job opening, and why don't you give me that job? And the Fourth Circuit has held that an accommodation of a reassignment to a vacant position has unique status under the ADA. and it's not really that good for the employee. And according to the Fourth Circuit, reassignment to a vacant position is an accommodation of last resort. The employer may hold reassignment in reserve for unusual circumstances. If it conflicts with other policies, such as a seniority-based hiring system, then that will prevail over even the ADA, according to the Fourth Circuit. And what the Fourth Circuit has said is that the ADA does not require employers to construct preferential accommodations that maximize workplace opportunities for their disabled employees, but requires preferential treatment only as necessary to provide them with the same opportunities as their non-disabled colleagues. Don't ask me to really explain that. That is one of the favorite answers of the lawyer when asked a straightforward question is, it depends. Whether reassignment is to a vacant position is going to be viable in any given case, it depends. How about job sharing? That's another accommodation that comes up quite a bit in the ADA. And the Fourth Circuit has suggested that job sharing may be an accommodation required by the ADA if the job share position sought is both vacant and existing. If it's not vacant and it's not existing at the time, the employer does not have a duty to create job sharing positions in order to accommodate an employee's disability. In other words, it has to be the employer's idea that job sharing is a good idea for any given position. And let me emphasize that the position must already exist, because the ADA does not require the employer to create a new position for a disabled employee.